Now, Roney, 810 WGY. Roney. One, two,
three, four. Hour two, Al Roney Show. Thank you for being here. Last hour, we hit, of course, the concealed carry permit licensing deal that got defeated by two votes, and, of course, a bit about Obama's health care reform, now health insurance reform, surprisingly enough, as he said. We'll get to that a little bit later on, because I know a lot of you guys wanted to weigh in on it. I wasn't able to get to you with the guests and that kind of thing. I have another guest with me right now, and I think this is going to be an incredible story and certainly something to think about. Because people reach out to me and ask me, hey, give me, you know, get this out there. And I said, sure. From 1957, 1987, Marines, dependents, naval personnel, and civilians who lived and worked at U.S. Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune in North Carolina were exposed to contaminated drinking water. Up to a million people. The Marines actually realized the water was contaminated, and it continued to be consumed or used up into that point, and people suffered medical problems from that. With me now is Andrea Byron, who I believe is, her family was stationed at this base too. Andrea, how are you?
I'm great, Al. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thanks for reaching out to me. I appreciate that. Tell me what this is about. I mean, this sounds crazy.
You know, it is. Well, you hit the nail right on the head. The contamination occurred from 1957 to 1987. And exposed up to 1 million people to contaminated water. The Marine Corps realized that the water was contaminated in 1980, but didn't shut down the last well completely until 1987.
What contamination are we talking about here? What chemicals? What?
Yeah, we're talking about some pretty serious chemicals. The two that the Marine Corps is primarily focused on are trichloroethylene and perchloroethylene, also known as TCE and PCE. And those chemicals are typically used in the dry cleaning venue as well as degreasing heavy metal machinery. But there are also some other chemicals in there that are really bad news. I'll just mention two of them, and they are benzene and vinyl chloride. Both of those chemicals are actually known to be cancer-causing agents.
Mm. Now, where was this stuff coming from?
It was actually coming from two sources. One was an off-base dry cleaners called ABC dry cleaners, which, not surprisingly, a lot of the Marines used.
Yeah. I was in the military. You got to get those uniforms pressed.
Exactly.
They look nice. Got to get them starched.
Exactly. The other source of contamination was actually from practices being used on the base, things not being disposed of correctly. You know, when they're cleaning their machinery, it's seeping down into the ground and into the groundwater. So those are the two primary sources of the contamination.
Now, were people using this water was going into base housing for everything, for cooking, eating, showering, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. It was being pumped to a lot of the areas of base housing. So people were drinking it when they're making apple juice for their children, showering in it, cooking in it, filling their baby pools up, washing their cars. I mean, people were exposed to it multiple times throughout each day.
All right, this is just, it seems odd because, you know, most of our water is tested, you know, when we're outside in the world. And
correct.
We're getting our water tested, make sure there's not any of these nasty chemicals in it. How could it have gone on this long without the military realizing it? Or did they not even think about it?
Well, at some point they did start actually testing it. And one of the documents that we actually have up on our website shows that they couldn't get accurate testing levels because something called a trihalomethane, which is a scientific word for another chemical, was misconstruing their results. So I think they're trying to place a little bit of blame on the, you know, we didn't know what was going on at the time.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, most people now would think, okay, well, if there's another chemical that's not letting you get accurate results, don't you think there's a problem?
When did you, Andrea, get involved in this? When is it something that you went, whoa, what's happening here?
Well, actually, my family received a letter on May 27th, 2000, stating that while we were on base, we were exposed to contaminated drinking water. And from that point on, I've been in the fight, so a little over 9 years now.
Who sent you the letter?
We actually got it from a group called the National Opinion Research Council, which is based out of the University of Chicago. We never actually received notification from the Marine Corps themselves.
So how did that group get involved and find out that something was going on here?
From what I understand, the Marine Corps had actually contracted them to get in contact with some of the people that were on base to do a study.
Okay.
And my dad participated in the study. They had a phone number in the letter. And he called up there, and the first question they asked him is, "Do you have children?" He said yes, and he said, "Are they still alive?"
Oh.
Well.
Wow.
I'm only 27, so, you know, there's really no reason I shouldn't be.
Yeah, hopefully, right?
Right.
What, any other kids, any other problems? Or, I mean, did your family itself have any health-related issues?
We have. Both me and my sister were on base. My dad went into the Marine Corps in 1981. I was born in 1982, and we actually didn't move on to base housing until I was about 6 months old. Up until that point, I was only seen by the doctor for well baby checkups,
mm-hmm.
And everything had been going great. And once we moved on to base, I was seen 47 times in a matter of 3 years in the emergency room for issues of fevers up to 105.9, various infections, rashes. And it wasn't until we actually moved off of base that I was diagnosed with aplastic anemia. And what that is that's it's a really rare bone marrow disease. Only 1 to 2 people per every million in the United States get that each year. So that equals out to about 300 to 600 new cases a year.
Mm.
And basically it makes the patient bloodless. Your bone marrow doesn't produce enough blood.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
No.
Sounds like it could cause some problems.
Oh, yeah. I spent a lot of my childhood in and out of hematologist's offices and in the hospital. One of the things that they say causes aplastic anemia is benzene.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm unfortunately not the only one that was affected in my family. My younger sister, Rachel, was in utero while we were on base, and then subsequently born and lived there for about 6 weeks after her birth,
mm-hmm.
and till the point where my dad was honorably discharged. She was actually born with multiple birth defects, a heart murmur, left palate. She was born without a pharyngeal flap, which regulates the air moving through your throat so that you can speak.
Yeah.
And she is learning disabled. When she was in high school, we actually had discovered that she had something called an arachnoid cyst on her spine, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a cyst that wraps itself around your spine like spider legs. And the physicians had said it had been there since birth.
Oh, we're talking with Andrea Byron. She's got a website up, The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. It's TFTPTF.com, and she with her dad was in the Marine Corps, and saying that how many people were exposed to this these chemicals through the water at the base, do you think?
From former Senator Dole's office, actually placed the number at around 1 million people.
Wow. From 1957 to 1987, and you didn't find out, you didn't even become aware of this until, what, the year 2000, right?
Correct. Yeah, and while it provided some relief to my parents, because for all those years they had stayed awake at night wondering what they did wrong, it's also brought up a lot of questions, too.
No,
why something wasn't done earlier.
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, is there some kind of a lawsuit here? Is there already filed? Or what are you looking at trying to achieve here? Did the military basically, because it's one thing if it was just, oh, wow, it was a big mistake. We made it, you know, it was an accident. But then it's another thing where, all right, we were aware of a problem, but we just thought it wasn't going to be a big deal. So we just avoided it. What do you think is the truth here?
I think for a number of years, they didn't realize what they were doing. But then in 1980, we've got thousands of documents on our site that showed that they did realize what they were doing and didn't take steps to stop it. That, to me, is criminal negligence. The things that we're trying to do at The Few, the Proud, the Forgotten are, one, to make sure that every person that was there during that time that may have been exposed is aware of that exposure. Mm-hmm. We're also trying to get the Department of Veterans Affairs involved because, and I'm not sure if you or your listeners are aware of this, but a lot of these men and women, you know, that proudly served their country and fought for everything we stand for, are battling these serious health problems, and they don't have any rights to recourse due to something called the Ferris Doctrine. And what the Ferris Doctrine is it basically bars service members from collecting any types of damages from personal injuries, whether or not they were suffered in the performance of their duties. We've got clusters of male breast cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and we're hoping that eventually the VA will allow disability claims for these veterans so that they're not going bankrupt, trying to pay for these illnesses that they suffered due to their time at Lejeune.
Andrea Byron, let's take a break here. I want to pick this up on the other side. You got a few more minutes with me, right? I'm sure.
Oh, yep, sure.
With the Few, the Proud, the Forgotten. We'll be right back with Andrea. This is certainly, you could describe it as a nightmare. Andrea Byron is with me. She's got the website up, The Few, the Proud, the Forgotten, TFTPTF.com. And it's, I mean, from 1957, think about this, from 1957 till around 1987. Marines, dependents, naval personnel, civilians who lived and worked on the U.S. Marine Corps base Camp Lejeune in North Carolina were exposed to contaminated drinking water. Up to 1 million people, potentially. And there's disease, Hodgkin's, male breast cancer, the problems in Andrea's family, medical issues. The U.S. Marine Corps, she says, realized that it was contaminated and it was a problem in 1980, but they didn't take care of it until 1987. For 7 years, she says they let those who fight for our freedom drink poison. Andrea, what has this gone? How far has this escalated since this happened so long ago? 2000, we're now 9 years, 2000, you found out about it. 9 years later down the road, Congress, anybody involved, any big guns helping with this thing or what?
Yeah, actually, in the past 9 years, we've had a lot of successes. We've had some big articles run in national media. We've also had some Congress people step up to bat for us. Currently, we have both Senators Hagan and Burr from North Carolina that have said, you know, we're behind you 100% and we're going to make sure that you guys are taken care of. They are both members of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and one of our goals is actually to get a hearing in front of that committee on this issue, and I think with their assistance, I think that's a very real possibility.
And so basically, the people can get the medical care that they need, right? You also said that earlier. You said before the break that there's a clause or something, a condition that for military members, you basically can't sue for damages, that kind of thing. Is that correct?
That is correct, and that only applies to military personnel. It does not extend to their dependents. But it says, hey, you know, if you get shot in the line of duty, we're not going to pay you for those damages. If you get poisoned by water in the line of duty, we're not going to pay for those damages either.
Well, there's one thing getting shot where you have
an
enemy shooting you, and there's another thing when it's your own guys who knew about a problem and were negligent in taking care of the problem. And you're saying that there's negligence here because it went 7 years before they did anything about it, right?
Exactly. They waited 7 years before the last well was completely capped and not used again. And then they waited, you know, an additional 13 years after that point to notify people. I mean, I can honestly attest from my own health experience that if my physicians had known that I had been exposed to benzene, treating my aplastic anemia would have been a lot easier. When you know the cause of something, it's a lot easier to come to a resolution.
In your mind, a rock solid case that you have the documentation, you can show this, the medical issues of the people who were exposed here, that it's not normal or consistent with another population and that kind of thing?
You know, I definitely think there's a lot of science out there that will back up everything we say, as well as the documentation from the Marine Corps and the EPA, et cetera, itself. But the one of the things that they like to throw out there is, well, we can only guess that this is what it was caused by. But when you look at the facts, you look at the diseases, there is definitely a higher incidence of certain diseases in this population than there are in the normal population. And one of the there's been a problem with getting all of that information just because people that are in the military are considered a transient group. We're spread out all over the place. We have people in every state in the country. We, on our website, we actually have members in Thailand, Italy, Puerto Rico, the Philippines. I mean, we are all over the place. And so trying to notify all of these people and get all of their health documentation has been a real task. It's not like situations that we've heard of in the past with Woburn, Massachusetts, and Hinckley, California, because all of those people are still there, or yeah, were still there at that time.
So
all over the place.
That's one of the things you're trying to do is find as many people as you can to find out they might be having these ailments, illnesses, and not really think much of it, not go back to, hey, I was at Lejeune during those years. I mean, maybe there's something to this, and they can reach out to you via the website and get on board and share the information that they have, right?
Exactly. And that, like I said, that is a huge point that we're trying to get across to everyone, is we want to make sure that these people who proudly serve their country know what has happened. That way they can make good medical decisions for themselves and their families, and that they can take the proper recourse, you know, whatever that might be for their family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things we're not Marine Corps bashers. We've got a lot of people who are still extremely proud of fighting for their country. Our two founders, the founders of the Few, the Proud, the Forgotten, one is my dad, Jeff Byron. He was an air traffic controller. And the other is Jerry Ensminger, who was actually a 24-and-a-half-year Marine. Drill instructor who lost his daughter Jamie to leukemia.
Andrea, thanks for coming on and sharing this. The website again is tftptf.com, right?
Yes. And please check us out. We've got a lot of great information, an illness registry, discussion board, photo gallery, and a historical documents library.
Good. And keep me posted too, all right?
All right. Thanks so much, Al.
Thank you, Andrea. I'll be right back. I'm Al Roney, 810 WGY. Let me get a quick recap in here and then we'll continue. If you are a Marine or a Marine-dependent Navy personnel or civilian who has lived and worked on the U.S. Marine Corps base Camp Lejeune from 1957 to 1987, you may have been contaminated by some nasty chemicals in some drinking water there. Don't want to freak you out, but if you need to go check on this website. We just talked to Andrea Byron, whose family was there, and she had some medical issues. Her sister did, when her dad was stationed at the base. TFTPTF.com. The Few, the Proud, the Forgotten. That's it. So it's basically the first letter. You got that? .com. Check it out. She's got a lot of good information there about that. They're just trying to get the assistance if this is the case. The Marine Corps basically found out about it in 1980, and then didn't take care of it till 1987. So if you know somebody who's been there who... this may just get the information. They're looking for people to find out who's been there, since people scatter all across the globe. And hopefully they'll get this issue resolved and get taken care of, and the people get the medical treatment that they need, deserved, and earned specifically. We hit Obama's health care a little bit. I didn't take a lot of calls. We had a guest in, Jeff Knott, who's a healthcare policy analyst and author of Navigating the Healthcare Maze. I thought it was interesting. A couple of things that jumped out at me. One, not surprising, the 47 million mantra from President Obama. They all use it. They're all not telling the truth. They know that that's not a true figure. It's just, come on, man. 47 million. I did not put my head through my TV set because I like my TV too much, but I did, I punched myself in the head. Not hard, because I don't want to have to use the healthcare system. It was just like a tap. You know, I don't want to have to use my insurance. So you got that. And then he referred to it as not healthcare reform, but health insurance reform. Saying over and over again, oh boy, the reporters were awful. Oh, they were awful. If you want, you're like, what? I'm screaming at my TV. Come on. Guys, ask the question. It's your job. just a couple of them. He gives really long, expansive answers, but you got to come back to it and go, yo, question, answer, please. I know it's not, I know you can explain it and go into great depth and detail about this, that, and the other thing, but let's get some nuts and bolts there. Said, lower the cost of healthcare while not adding to the federal deficit. Show me the plan. The House plan is a disaster. An abomination. That's not going to work, and they should have asked him straight up, do you like the House plan? Is it going to, would you sign off on it? Yes, no, or is it dead? I believe it's dead. So far, the plans all suck. Why so fast? Why do we need this by August? Letters from parents with sick children. I swear to God, that was his. Well, I get letters from parents with sick children. They need to. Okay, listen. We're not going to be able to help them. Okay, right now, we're not going to be able to deal with that. That's already happened. No, this is going to take, this would, for me to see this any quicker than a year would be frightening. You roll out a plan that's going to lower the costs of healthcare for everybody and not add to the federal deficit without the government taking total control. I want to see that plan. I'd love to see that plan. All right, so that's one thing we've got out there. Concealed carry got lost by two votes. Defeated by two votes. This is the idea. Basically, you can pack your heat. You know, you got a license for it. Excuse the nomenclature, but you got your gun. You're hiding the gun. It's legal. It's okay. It's concealed carry. You can't cross state lines and do the same thing there because you're, according to Chuck Schumer, possibly an alcoholic pedophile who belongs to a hate group. Senate floor speech, I kid you not. He's totally amped up that this thing got defeated by two votes. It had almost 60 to the 39 no's. It needed 60 to pass. And here's what Schumer had to say after the fact. Give me cut two there.
This was a narrow escape. And had this amendment passed, safety in America would have decreased. Plain and simple. Lives were saved with the defeat of this amendment.
Isn't that great? We have two lifesavers. We have Kiki Gillibrand and Chucky Schumer. Kiki saving us from the menace of trans fats, even though she doesn't know how many calories are in a Big Mac. And Chuck Schumer is going to tell me that now that I have my good people in the United States who have licenses to carry a firearm can't transfer over to New York State and do that. So if somebody comes in and starts shooting me, oh well. I guess I'll just hopefully I won't bleed out waiting for the cops and ambulance to arrive. But we're safer. All right, let me get to your phone calls, questions. You want to weigh in on those items? That's cool. I have other stuff, too. 1-800-TALK-WGY, star WGY. We've got Chris in North Greenbush. Hey, Chris.
Good morning.
What's up?
Yeah, it would have been a very happy day if those extra two votes had come through, but I guess that's the way it goes.
Well, we're too short. Schumer, yeah. And that's two votes right there. And Gillibrand used to kind of like this stuff, I guess.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused and angered by her, but so it goes.
Yeah.
I have a concealed carry permit, and right now I'm carrying a Ruger SP-101, which I pretty much always carry with me. And I never used to consider carrying a gun, but I went to college in Washington, D.C., and everybody that I lived with, four other males, had all been held up at gunpoint besides myself. We had two cars stolen at gunpoint. One was pistol whipped. My mother was at Columbia High School when John Romano came in with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And started attempting to kill people with bird shots. So mm-hmm. He kind of failed. But I think it's just that some people have the attitude that you're going to take on personal responsibility. And other people, like my mother, have the attitude that guns are inherently wrong, and therefore, if you dislike guns, then they won't hurt you.
That's crazy. I'm sorry.
It really is, but I can't bring her around on it. I mean, my house was burglarized about 8 months ago, and she came home a very short time period after it was burglarized, and they were armed because they had stolen a gun safe of mine. And no convincing her whatsoever. She just won't be brought around.
No, it's weird. It's almost like, okay, if I hide or ignore it or pretend it's not real,
it's gonna go away.
It'll go away. It'll just magic. You know, it's. I look at all of these, the horrible big media sensational major shootings like the Virginia Tech or the most recent, the Rochester Immigration Center shooting.
And the amount of people with CCW permits in Virginia, let alone the potential of students that must have had CCW permits at Virginia Tech. Infuriating that these students had to leave their pistols at home.
No, and or be rounded up and thrown in jail if they were caught with them. And I'm thinking, you can't assume that that's not going to happen to you. I know the odds are in favor of me not going outside my house and getting shot by a crazed gunman. On the other hand, all of these people went to where they were going with no thought in their mind that this was going to happen to me.
My mother was in an active shooter situation. If you look at the odds of being in an active shooter situation, it is insanely slim. I mean, the odds of being in a building where there's an active shooter is so low, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And yet she happened to be there. And that's the point. I do a defensive shooting league, and two of the people in the defensive shooting league are both teachers, and both of them constantly talk about how they can't carry their pistols at work, and you know, it's just a matter of what can they bring. Can they have mace? Can they have a knife? Is that okay? Will they get charged if they're caught for having that?
Yeah.
And one of them is probably a 100-pound female who's in her 30s, and I don't think that she could defend herself very well against a attacking male, but under New York State law, she's restricted. So
nope, can't do it. I mean, Gillibrand's explanation that the South Dakota is different than New York. Why is it different? Why is it different for me to defend myself and my family in South Dakota or New York?
Absolutely.
What?
Someone called in your show yesterday and said they had a Utah concealed carry permit. You can get a Utah permit and carry in 33 states. What that should say is that the majority of states in this country support reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
Because 33 out of 50 support reciprocity right there. And then if you get a Florida permit, you can carry there, and then New Hampshire, and so on. So you have all these options to carry in other states, but yet Chuck Schumer clearly thinks that the majority is on his side. And it's just really unfortunate.
Do you think he may be right, though? Maybe the majority of people do not look at this in a common sense kind of reality check way and just go, guns are bad, guns are evil, I don't want anybody to have them. Not, of course, thinking that, you know, they're still going to get them.
If you look at the numbers, I mean, New York City, like, my concealed carry permit's not valid in New York City, but in New York City, they do issue carry permits, so there are people in New York City with permits. There's only a few thousand, but there are still permits in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unfortunate, all the red tape you have to go through, and it's not as though they're actually checking anything out. It's merely a sheet of paper you fill out, you pay a tax, so you pay anywhere from like $10 to $100, depending on the state, and then you're approved to carry a gun there. So it's merely collecting money so that you can carry a gun there.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, Chris, appreciate the call. I want to get some others in there. I get in arguments like this with my wife too, though. She does not like. I mean, it's like guns. I get that. I understand, but I try to just explain. Hey, listen, let's be realistic about this deal. Chris in Ballston Spa. Hey, Chris.
Good morning, Al. Haven't called in a while.
Hey,
Al,
how are you?
Al, you're just refusing to admit that Chuck Schumer saves lives.
I am. I'm nutty that way.
Oh, that's not why I called. I called about health care.
Yeah.
Al, I just want to ask you and the audience a question. Am I selfish to think that, you know, I don't want to have to pay for other people's health care premiums? In other words, you know, I go out and buy my own health care or through my employer or whatever, and I guess I just expect other people to do that too. Am I selfish for thinking that way?
You're selfish if you look at the 47 million and break that number down and realize who's truly in, quote, need, and who's just refusing or who shouldn't be here in the first place.
Okay, those are the folks I want to...
That's why this whole thing... is based on a false premise. And the president did that again last night, not once, not twice, but three times, in referring to the census data that came out a number of years ago with 47 million. And the census itself, if you look at the data, you're talking guys, you know, they're in their 20s who just don't purchase the insurance.
Right.
You're talking the illegal immigration. You're talking people who are transitioning between jobs where, I mean, I've been in this situation where I went a few weeks without insurance.
Right.
You know, until I got picked up again. So the number isn't being honest. I would say this, when you get somebody, you know, who's laid off, somebody who loses their insurance, that kind of thing, all of that, I don't have a problem with there being some kind of safety net
right.
for those people with
tax
dollars.
And I would argue, that we have that safety net now. I mean, you can, I don't know, a gunshot wound or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the emergency room, they have to treat you. They're not going to put you to the side.
Oh, of course, of course.
Right.
It doesn't matter who you are. Nobody's
right.
going to get laying bloody in the streets. That doesn't happen. It's the seeking of care people might withhold on, and that's on them. They could still get mm-hmm. the care. But the deal is, though, the problem is the costs of
right.
health care.
It's going out of control.
The insurance boogeyman is what's being, oh, it's all the bad insurance companies. Listen, some of these guys, it depends on who you are, whether who wins or loses in that. If I'm paying so much a month for my insurance plan and all of a sudden I need, you know, brain surgery, I'm making out on the deal, aren't I?
Mm-hmm.
I got my money's worth for that insurance.
Right.
That insurance company has to pay out a lot of money, and the reason they have to pay out a lot of money is because the medical care is so expensive. That's going up, and I have no argument with the president at all about that.
Right, and that's what we need to address. But can we just get rid of this notion that there is a health care crisis, though? We have the best health care in the world. If I get sick, this is where I want to be, baby. I don't want to be in China
or
the Middle East or any of these other places.
No, yeah. I mean,
it just drives me crazy.
Well,
the
whole crisis thing is nonsensical. I mean, let's look at it. And people show up with their horror stories, but you don't hear there. Most of the stories are successful. And come on. Let's roll this back and everybody on the sides of this get a little reality check. We're talking about human beings. And medical treatment, it's not an exact science. It will never be perfect. There will never be a perfect healthcare plan. Impossible. We're trying to find the best, most effective, and least restrictive.
And we're all going to die, Al, eventually.
Yes, we are. And I
hate to say it.
We will die. That's a good.
Al, did you see the guy real quick, the 113-year-old guy in Britain? He was a World War I veteran. He said the secrets to life were whiskey, wild women, and smokes or something like
that.
Yeah,
I know.
I thought that was great.
I love people who ruin the curve. Love it. Keep ruining the curve. I love it. I'll be right back. All right, let's get right to it. You guys, I've already said enough stuff. Joe in Johnsburg. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Al.
Hey.
I was wondering, when did we get guards on the borders of New York State to keep the people that wanted to come in here with guns out?
Right.
Because it doesn't seem to me that we have a big problem with people sneaking across our border with guns and committing mayhem.
Right, even illegally, right? But
right.
The legal people who have signed on the dotted line and had their IDs checked who can carry, we got to watch out for that. Well, because Chuck Schumer said it. I mean, answer the question, Joe. Do you want an alcoholic pedophile who belongs to a hate group coming into New York with guns? I mean, that was his, it worked. It scared everybody, so he wins.
Yeah, I know it was his premise, but his premises are generally, you know, kind of leery.
Well, let's play his success again. Give me cut two again.
This was a narrow escape.
Oh, yes.
And this amendment passed,
wow.
Safety in America would have decreased.
Oh, my God.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Lives were saved with
Bombs.
The defeat of this amendment.
Oh, lives were saved. Oh, so
is
spectacular.
Is he Sheldon Silver's brother, or what's the story?
I don't know. What happened to Kiki? Kiki used to say, guns are cool, I keep them under my bed, but now she's bugging out, too. She's
I'll do what
you tell me, Chucky. I'm with you, baby.
Yeah.
You keep getting reelected. I want that too. I don't really want to go back and get a real job.
You're right. Okay, Al, we'll catch you later.
All right, Joe. Joe just wants to have a little fun. Laugh. A laugh or two with Joe. Steve in Clifton Park. Hey, Steve.
Hello, Al. How are you today?
All right, Steve.
I've been 23 years in the insurance industry in New York State. And to give you an example of some of the craziness that's gone on, in 1986, we used to sell an old-fashioned indemnity plan, which is real health insurance, not like we have today with the managed care, the PPOs, the HMOs. And we had a traditional dental plan that covered twice as much as it does today. The maximum out-of-pocket expense to the family was $1,300 a year without any limit on the lifetime benefit.
Wow.
That plan for a couple with two kids in their early 30s was $340 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 1992, or so I think it was 1993, the Health Reform Act of New York State, signed into law by Mario Cuomo, says we're going to have open enrollment, we're going to have community rated, everybody's going to have insurance because it's unaffordable, and we're going to make it available to everybody. That was a rate down in Westchester County. Today, in the Capital District, a top-of-the-line PPO with a dental plan, which is half the benefit, and there's no comparison between the indemnity plan and the PPO. The PPO is running, a top-of-the-line PPO is running around $1,200 a month, and the dental plan, which covers about half, about $180 a month.
Mm-hmm.
They have taken the rates and made them over 10 times the amount. And we have a couple of things you got to look at. Tort reform. You have doctors.
Well, hold on. Hold on. Before you get into that, Steve, what happened then? I mean, is it just the increasing costs of healthcare itself, whether it's the treatments, the medicine, the doctor's visits, or did something screw up bureaucratically that made all of these insurance rates? Or are you just the bad guy who's raping people for their cash to get rich quick on insurance fraud?
Well, you've got a couple of things. One, when you had an indemnity plan, everybody had this thing called a deductible. Not everybody ran to the doctor for every little sniffle and whatnot. And when the HMOs first came out and the PPOs, some of them had no copayments or $2 copayment. Everybody and their brother ran to the doctor for everything. So the utilization went through the roof. Then you've got the whole situation, and from a broker's standpoint, the commissions got cut by 300%. So it's not like we got rich on it. Mm-hmm. We lost money. You know, if you were making $50,000 a year on your book of business, first thing that happened was you had no book of business if you dealt in the small group market, because every plan under 50 lives was canceled. And you lost everything.
Well, here's the deal that I'm not understanding with the president's premise last night and saying, well, we need a public option so that way the regular insurance agencies, insurance companies, it'll make the competition better because they'll lower their costs and make their services better, and that'll make it all happen. Can that happen? Is that a reality? And I'm out of time here, but Steve, if you can stay over to the next segment, that'd be cool, because you sound like you're in the business and you know a lot more about it than I do. So if you can stick around with me, that'd be great, and give me an answer to that question. I mean, is that even doable, that they'll just go, all right, we'll lower our rates, everything will be great now, you got it, A-OK, be right back.